You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
Oh, no. I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. Cast your mind back to the year 2000. We had the Millennium Bug, an Air France Concorde crash near Paris, the US Supreme Court decides in favour of George W. Bush in a split decision over the 2000 presidential election, and Sony launched the PlayStation 2. Something that may have slipped your mind here in Australia is that the year 2000 was the start of terrestrial digital television in this country. This begs the question, how has digital TV evolved in this country over the past 9.5 years? Remember when music went digital? 10 years after the launch of the compact disc, you'd need to be a detective to find an old vinyl album in a shop anywhere. But visit your local white goods store here in Australia, and you can still buy an old analogue TV, should you want one. The Australian government didn't help the take-up very much, as they chose to offer protection to the then-infant Foxtel, an upstart cable TV provider. Multi-channelling was strictly taboo for at least the first 5 years. When digital TV was launched, the government told everyone that the turn-off for the analogue TV broadcasts would start in 2008. That would give everyone plenty of time to migrate to digital. The ABC and SBS were the first broadcasters to start running different programs on their alternate digital channels, but there were strict regulations as to what could be shown. It wasn't until January this year that the multi-channeling law was relaxed. A group consisting of the 5 free-to-air broadcasters got together and conceived Freeview, a somewhat misleading campaign which was launched in 2008 to promote 15 different TV channels free of charge to your TV via the airwaves. We're almost 6 months into 2009, and what have we got to show for it? Well, not much. Channel 10 now has 2 high-definition channels and 2 standard-definition channels. Recently, they launched 1HD, a sporting channel where you could watch anything from basketball to tiddlywinks. You can now watch this on 3 out of 4 of these channels to the cost of a high-definition feed of their regular program. The ABC are leading the pack as per usual, with 1 high-definition channel and 3 standard-definition channels. ABC One and ABC HD run the same content. ABC Two runs catch-up TV and the odd first run. And the ABC has just received funding for a 24-hour kids channel, which will be on ABC Three. SBS also utilised the channels well, with different programming across the board. But as for 7 and 9, they're not in any hurry to utilise their alternate digital channels. To add salt to the digital wound, there seems to be a lot of confusion around the technical standards for the delivery of digital TV in Australia. Free TV Australia are shying away from the globally accepted MPEG streams and pushing for a new system called MHEG, something that only a couple of other countries are using. This, in turn, means manufacturers of domestic receivers are reluctant to make equipment for our market, resulting in a shortage of devices such as PVRs. So here we are, nearly 10 years down the track from the launch of digital TV in Australia, and 6 months away from the beginning of the shutdown of the analogue TV system. And what have we got to show for it? No one government or organisation is to blame. Responsibility needs to be shared across many organisations. But one thing's for sure. Other countries destined to go down the path of migration from analogue to digital television can look at Australia's effort as an example of how not to do it.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam Turner heads off to CBIT to talk about VoIP. Google trips over the power lead again. Sony and Pioneer are doing it tough. Conroy on the NBN back foot over the opposition's threat to block the bill. And video game sales are on the slowdown. First up, though, here's the latest happenings in the world of technology for this week with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the federal opposition threatens to block NBN plans in the Senate. Intel Corporation cops a $2 billion fine from competition regulators in Europe. Microsoft spends up big on a mystery game for the Xbox. Another embarrassing outage for Google. And Atlantis astronauts make critical repairs to the Hubble telescope. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The federal opposition has threatened to block plans for Australia's national broadband network in the Senate unless Communications Minister Stephen Conroy tables the so-called expert advice, which led to the original NBN tender process being scrapped. While Prime Minister Kevin Rudd disbanded the NBN request for tender in April, he reportedly did so on advice from an expert panel, which found that none of the applicants offered acceptable proposals. The government is now under pressure to produce documents which were used by the expert panel to arrive at their recommendation. The Senate passed a motion last week which requires Senator Conroy to table the NBN expert panel's report, as well as the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission's report on regulatory issues. Senator Conroy's failure to produce these documents could result in any NBN-related legislation being blocked by the opposition. But Senator Conroy said he had no intention of tabling the documents, which he said contained commercially sensitive information, and that their release would be irresponsible. Mr. Conroy went on to say that the opposition continues to seek to opportunistically delay the rollout of high-speed broadband to support Australia's future businesses and services, despite endorsing investments in economic infrastructure. Intel Corporation, with about 80% of the global chip-making market, has been fined the equivalent of $2 billion Australian dollars for forcing its major rival AMD out of the market. According to competition regulators in Europe, Intel used its market dominance unfairly by secretly giving rebates to distributors who only stocked Intel brand chips. Regulators also said that Intel had paid distributors to stop or delay the release of products using rival AMD chipsets. The EU Competition Commissioner, Ms. Neelie Kroes, spoke on Australian government radio last week.
They were absolutely hiding what they were doing. They did it in a way, and we found the proofs of that. They did it in a way that they just took advantage of their position that they are having more than 70% of the market.
Intel denied the allegations and said that the decision would be appealed. An Intel spokesperson, Ms. Claudine Mangano, also spoke on Australian Government Radio.
We do not believe our practices have violated European law. We disagree with the decision and we believe the allegations are not true.
Analysts expect that Intel may soon face similar action from anti-competition authorities in the United States and other countries. Microsoft purchased a startup gaming company last week, which is believed to be close to launching a new game, described as red hot by tech news site Channel News. The startup company Big Park, based in Vancouver, was co-founded and is partly owned by a Microsoft video game business executive. Big Park is also staffed by veterans from well-known games development company Electronic Arts. The new game will now be developed exclusively for Microsoft's Xbox 360 games console. In a press release, Mr. Phil Spencer, General Manager, Microsoft Game Studios, said that Microsoft was delighted by the opportunity to welcome the Big Park team into Microsoft Game Studios, and that the team is composed of some of the most experienced and creative minds working in the industry today. No news was forthcoming about the game currently under development. Internet search giant Google last week apologised for an hour-long outage which left millions of people unable to access its search page or Google Mail. Users of popular products like Google Maps, Google Analytics, and the video sharing website YouTube were also affected. Google announced on the official company blog that an error in one of their systems had caused Google to direct some web traffic through Asia, which in effect created a traffic jam. Google said that as a result, about 14% of users experienced slow services or even interruptions. Google apologized for the outage and said that steps were being taken to ensure that a similar problem would not happen again. Analysts have said that while the outage would just be an annoyance to the average web user, it could have a serious impact on Google's attempts to promote some of its web-based applications to businesses. The outage comes after Google experienced a similar disruption in February, leaving millions of Gmail users worldwide without access to the free web-based email service. And astronauts from the space shuttle Atlantis have replaced six gyroscopes on the aging Hubble telescope that help point the device with extreme precision. Only one of the six gyroscopes was still functioning correctly, while three had broken down completely. The mission to repair the telescope has been years in the making. The repair job, some 350 miles above the Earth's surface, took an hour and a half longer than expected, but everything went well despite the threat of low oxygen and low battery power in the astronauts' spacesuits. Astronauts also installed a powerful new $130 million camera in the Hubble telescope and a critical data computer just a few days prior to replacing the gyroscopes. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Interesting news from across the Tasman.
The ultimate DRM.
It is, isn't it?
A slap in the face to everyone.
You feel like you've lost your left leg when you don't have internet at home. What am I going to do?
He made phone calls to, like, Walmart. Oh, good on him.
Did you know that digital audio broadcasting started in Melbourne today?
I think it's interesting that it is DRM-free. It shows that the market's finally decided that people do value not having those insane restrictions on their music.
Poor old Dodo, they're in their line of fire. Optus, they're about to be in the line of fire.
It's just like the region encoding on your DVDs, I would think.
The way these things spread is they infect your friend's machine and your email address is in your friend's machine's address book.
And I bet you that person doesn't listen to our show.
No, they don't. Right. And they don't listen to anybody.
Adam said that's a great camera Ron's got. Shame about the built-in phone.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. On Tech Talk Radio.
Hello again. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here. Welcome wherever you're listening to us. Whether you're here in Melbourne listening on 3WBC or in New Zealand listening over there. Good news for New Zealand tonight too, by the way. But anyway, hold that space. How are you, Dr. Ron?
You
another radio station for me
Switch,
today.
You might be on Cairns. You could be anywhere.
You might be.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. All over the place, like a good rash.
I'm well, thank you. How are you this week?
I'm a bit radio stationed out, and it's only Monday night.
You're twittering and twit-picking from your phone here in the studio.
I am. I've found some lovely new software, which we can talk about later, which you load up. If you're running an S60, a Symbian 60 operating system mobile phone, and you're a Twitter freak, there's some good software out there at the moment. It costs you $10, but it's well worth the buy, and I've been playing with that today.
And why is it good news for New Zealand?
I haven't got to that bit yet. Don't steal it.
Sorry.
Read the rundown, Dr. Ron.
There's a rundown?
Yeah, there is.
Okay.
I do it each week. Hadn't you noticed? JD's here. Good evening, JD. How are you tonight?
Hey, Andrew. I'm good. Yourself?
Oh, yeah. Can't complain. Lots of news happening again today. I don't know what it is about Mondays, but oh, my goodness. Goes ballistic. The news. Have you got any gossip on Apple yet? Or anything new that you can tease us about for the show tonight?
Let me see. There was a bit of a rumour that those that have put the new Snow Leopard beta onto their netbooks, like Dr. Ron's sitting next to me.
Didn't think he put it Snow
I'm
beta.
Not running Snow Leopard.
I'm not
running
Snow Leopard,
but he's talking about the
one
netbook.
Of these days I will get him to do that. Allegedly, the Snow Leopard seems to be optimised for the Atom processor. Now, Apple don't make anything with an Atom processor at the moment, apart from the Apple TV, so it'll be interesting to see if there's a new product in the wind.
Well, didn't we talk about it last week, I think it was, that they were going to start making their own chips?
Yeah, a few times, actually, we've talked about
allegedly.
That.
Yeah, anyway.
The Atom processor is very popular at the moment in these little netbook computers.
Well, there you go. Mm. So watch this space. There'll be a little Apple netbook out before you know it.
Potentially.
Anyway.
Fantastic.
All right, just a couple of interesting things before we get going in the opening of the show tonight. We were talking about television, Freeview, and the debacle it is digital TV in this country.
Yes.
Well, yeah, the plot thickens anyway. It's just a pointer. Channel 10, I alluded to, had two HD channels. It's actually one. It just appears multiple times on your set-top box as you go for a bit of a spin. Have you noticed you get it on Channel 1, Channel 10, and Channel... Oh, no, you don't. I get it on 10. You get 11, 11 and 12. Most, yeah, they're all over the place.
What do you get on 10?
You get the old Channel 10, standard definition Channel 10.
And you get the new programming on 1, 11 and 12.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
Okay. This is what Freeview has brought us.
Well, yes. Yes. So, and the multi-channeling's all sort of underway and all that sort of stuff. And MPEG will still be the main method of distributing information from TV stations to the household. But they're trying to do this MPEG thing based on the interactivity and electronic program guide thing. It's all very confusing. And I work in the industry.
Now you're talking about compression systems, aren't you, when you talk about MPEG
delivery systems,
and MPEG delivery systems, the way that we actually get the sound and the pictures to our televisions.
Yep. And, of course, Channel 7 and Channel 9 are still out there in the wilderness. They're not quite sure what they're doing, although Channel 9 is going to start breaking away from the simulcast between, I think, 11 and 4 during the daytimes.
Oh, okay.
So maybe Channel 9 are going to start doing some stuff in HD. But then again,
they're allowed to now, aren't they?
Everyone's allowed to do whatever they like. That's why Freeview is so confusing. So 15 channels. Well, ABC 3, I'm looking forward to that. ABC Kids 24/7, the electronic babysitter. It's going to rule, JD. Don't you agree?
24/7 kids programming.
ABC Kids.
My kids will never go to sleep.
You can watch anything you like. dear. No, it comes in handy when they sit up late at night and they're sick. Can we watch? No. Actually, it'll probably work against us adults when that happens, won't it? Because
that's what the set-top box is for.
Well, the PVR, really, isn't it? So you can record something else while the kids... Because I find that very frustrating in a family of young kids. You sit down to watch something adult and humorous, and someone decides to stay up and he can't explain it. I was watching the Gruen transfer the other night. Did you see that by any chance with the ad on the front about the Gillette shaving product?
Yes, I did. That was rather amusing.
Yeah, well, I had a seven-year-old sitting on the couch while that was going
to
air.
Daddy, why is this funny? Well, it's like this kid.
Oh, dear. So it was most humorous. Anyway, come and visit us on our chat room. You probably had experiences like that. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. You can log in and say g'day. Wherever you might happen to be, if you're listening to us live, we'll put some more pictures up on Twitter lately. But, one of the things to do I was going to tell you about today, Dr. Ron, I spent some time in the ABC here in Southbank on the radio in Adelaide, actually. It's wonderful, this technology thing.
So you're in Southbank in Melbourne and your voice is coming out in Adelaide.
That's right.
How does that work?
Oh, it's the wonders of Wi-Fi.
And I bet wonders of Wi-Fi. It's a mother of all Wi-Fi hotspots the ABC's running.
Oh, absolutely.
And I bet it sounds like you're sitting right next to the person in Adelaide when you come out on the radio.
Oh, it does. Yeah. Sounds like I'm right next to Carol.
Sounds like we're talking now like you're in Adelaide and I'm in Melbourne.
Could be. Mm. Yeah, exactly. But the thing, I was talking with the chap from the CSIRO today about the Wi-Fi issue that happened with their patent infringements, which they won, and they're sort of
The CSIRO won patent infringements
for
people using the Wi-Fi technology.
They did, but that's not what I was talking to them about. I was really keen. We were chatting about the technology a little bit. Did you know that Wi-Fi started back in World War II with the radar development?
That's
when it all started, and that's when the CSIRO, then the CS, I think, I can't remember their acronym. They're one letter short back there. The CSIR is what they were. They formed a radio physics laboratory to conduct research in radar. And at the end of the war, David Rivett, the chairman of CSIR, decided to keep the group together to continue research in peace times, using radio waves, obviously. And in those early days, Australia was one of three key centres for radio astronomy, with the UK and the Netherlands. So it was all to do with radio physics and all that sort of stuff. And that's where Wi-Fi first found its birthplace.
Isn't it amazing what's invented and what's developed through military research? Because you've made mention then of it actually progressing during peacetime. And it's the same with the Apollo mission and all of the stuff that NASA did in the early years. It was all Cold War type research, wasn't it?
It was. And you can now tweet from space. We'll talk about that later on in the program.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's great.
The other interesting thing, you know the dish, the big dish at Parkes?
I've do.
Been there.
Yeah, well, that was
fantastic tour.
That was a CSIRO development back in the good old days there too. So, you know, they're into all their radio astronomy and things like that. So it was a really eye-opening type sort of thing today. And here's to the CSIRO because they won against 14 of the biggest giants in the world with their patent system, you know, the Microsofts, the Apples, the D-Links, just to name a few. I'll find the list. I've got a list here of them all. But, that's what happens when you don't pay for what you should be using. And, of course, there was all this argument saying, but they did it first and it's not your technology. But a judge in a Texas court found that it was.
Well, it was kept quiet for so long because of the court action, wasn't it? The legal action that was going on.
They 2 years of legal. 2 years of legal action there was. And, of course, in the United States, they can't talk about their undisclosed settlement, and they're not allowed to talk about it over there. So, I do have it here somewhere, but I've got a paper that I've got here in front of me.
I do have some notes here. The 14 companies include big names like Microsoft, Nintendo, and Hewlett-Packard.
Yeah.
Massive names.
Yeah, big players in the world.
Enormous names in the industry.
So I guess the upshot of it is that potentially there might be a fraction increase in price.
That's good. CSIRO have said that they will plough all that extra funds back into research.
Oh, well, that's a benefit to the CSIRO, but as consumers, we might pay a few shekels more for our next laptop because we have to fund the CSIRO's incredible development in Wi-Fi.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Anyway, there you go. There's a bit of gossip on today. So you can have a look at the pictures. I put some pictures up there on TweetPix today whilst I was traversing the world.
Now, what's TweetPix and how do we follow you if we want to look at these pictures?
Oh, just go to TTR2008, which is on the main Twitter page.
Yep.
And click the link, and that's probably the easiest way, and you'll see some pictures from today. And even tonight here in the studio setting up, you boys building a television station. It's all there in colour.
Excellent. Yeah, we had our heads down trying to get all this stuff together and you were busy snapping photographs.
Yeah, well, I've been there and done that professionally in television. I don't want to do it again, so I'm quite amused to see you guys sit there and pull your hair out whilst you're plugging cameras into things and all that sort of stuff. So
there's a lot of hair pulling going on too.
Coro, Dr. Ron, what correspondence needs to be entered into this evening?
There is a correspondence. Hello to Gerard. Gerard says, hi, guys.
Hello, Gerard.
On the show a few weeks ago, you mentioned that no upgrade is possible from Windows 7 Beta to the release candidate. I was all set to do a backup and clean install as suggested during the show.
Yes. There was a rumour back there that there was not an upgrade path. So if you loaded up the beta version or even the release candidate of the new Windows 7 product, that there was no upgrade path, which means you couldn't upgrade to a full rigidig working version.
Having said but that, Andrew, let us say
we've
this.
Been corrected?
We have. Gerard accidentally discovered that an upgrade is possible. A small change to one file on the installation image is all that's required. It's quite easy to do, and it works. Details can be found.
Now, this is the dodgy bit.
This is the dodgy bit. What we do is
it might work, as in it executes.
The reason why JD has jumped in straight away is because it's a link to a forum called ihackintosh.com, which I will post in the chat room right now, which we will put in the show notes as well if you're interested, because it's a long URL with a reference to a blog post. But JD, have you had any experience with this, with ihackintosh.com?
No, I haven't.
No?
Have you heard of ihackintosh?
I have, yes.
Have you?
I visited there
frequently. What sort of things do you find on ihackintosh? Oh, I wouldn't have thought Windows things would be the flavour of the
not.
Blog.
Generally not. You never know what's going to pop up on the internet, though, do you?
Thanks, Jared.
Thanks, Jared. You never know, do you, about these things?
If you hear these great little rumors, send them through to us. Not that we're out to, you know, encourage this sort of thing, but it is frustrating. Imagine building an operating system and building a laptop with Windows 7 on it, then having to start again when you move to the, you know, commercial release.
Indeed. We also have to say hello to some new forum users.
Do we?
The last week we've got
forum users.
Three new forum users. Emma C. Hi, Emma. Luna and Dan99 have all signed up to the forum over the last week or so, which is terrific. We've now got over 200 forum users.
Oh, goodness me.
So,
going well done.
Great guns.
That's about
there.
How we do on the chat on a night, too.
Just
it seems
about.
Like it anyway.
It is just about. Forum.techtalkradio.com.au if you'd like to talk about anything that we discuss on the program, or if you have any suggestions for the show. Thank you to everyone who keeps sending the feedback through. We will get to it. We will talk about it on air and we will respond when we're able, but we get huge amounts of email, or have been lately anyhow. So don't be disappointed if we don't get back to you straight away. The other thing I'd like to talk about, Andrew, is something that we mentioned last week on the program.
Yeah, off you go.
Sony's biggest customer, JB Hi-Fi, is not happy owing to Sony opening up retail stores. We mentioned this at the start of the show, and
yes, we're reading this on the web. And
we were. This story appeared on a consumer electronics website called Smart House or Smart House News, and it said that Sony was opening retail stores and that JB was not happy about this. We also made mention that Sony is the biggest customer of JB, and we were talking about it was interesting, in our opinion, how the major corporation was doing this and the effects it would have on its biggest reseller, JB Hi-Fi. We have in the last week received information that Sony has publicly black banned an organization called Foursquare Media and its publications. And Foursquare Media's publications include Smart House, which actually made that media release. Mm-hmm. Sony issued a strongly worded statement which claims that David Richards of Foursquare Media has unfairly and inaccurately reported on the company, and in doing so has defamed Sony.
Oops.
That sounds like we shouldn't be talking about it currently.
What we're trying to do is set the record straight and explain where we're coming from. The statement effectively claims that Richards' rash of recent negative coverage is a response to Sony not advertising with Foursquare Media. So the statement goes on.
That answers my next question. What have the Romans ever done for us?
Well, yes, the aqueducts. David Richards has in the past stood by his coverage of Sony, claiming that his criticism of the company has been fair and valid, but Sony might be taking legal action there for those comments. All we're doing was discussing the news article which Smart House had released, and we're trying to be as balanced as we possibly can, and that's the other side of the coin this week. So if there's any more developments there, We'll let you know.
Pending legal action, we might let you know.
We might let you know. Sony and JB have both come out and denied the allegations there made by Smart House, which is saying that that JB was unhappy with Sony. They're saying, no, that's okay. Not the case at all. That's a follow-up from last week, and that's our correspondence, Andrew.
Fantastic. All right, let's onwards and upwards. There's so much to get through today. Hopefully we'll touch on a lot of this. Broadband advisors collect $700,000. You know, this is the people that were advising the said Minister for Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy,
Senator,
the BCDEFG.
Stephen Conroy.
That's him.
Advising the ABCDEFG.
Taxpayers have been left to front almost $703,000 worth of expenses racked up by the panel of experts who came to the great conclusion that doing it yourself was the best thing because they could trust nobody.
Right.
The account includes remuneration for panel members and about $90,000 worth of travel expenses. Didn't I see that on A Current Affair or one of those shows the other night?
How much in travel expenses?
$90,000. A bit of a junket somewhere. I think it's in the UK. I think they went to have a look or something like that. So, anyway, Kevin Rudd last month announced the early termination of the original broadband network tender on advice from this expert panel, which found that none of the bidders had offered acceptable proposals.
Mm.
But anyway, there you go. Racked up $700,000 of taxpayers' money to come to that conclusion.
Mm.
Money well spent, boys. What do you think?
Money well spent. I can't really comment on money well spent. I don't know what star motels they were staying in and what sort of caviar they were eating, but it's a lot of money well spent. It's a lot of money spent, isn't it?
It's funny. Once again, because I've got so much on the bench here tonight, Nick Minchin came out earlier this week, and under FOI, Freedom of Information, he's trying to find out exactly what happened, where that money went. Says he's fossicking through his papers trying to find that particular piece of information. I'll get back to you on that. So
I was talking in the news at the front of the program in this episode in regards to the federal opposition threatening to block plans for the National Broadband Network in the Senate.
Oh, bring it on.
And in addition to these sorts of issues, the other thing they were asking for was for Mr. Conroy to table the expert advice, which led to the original NBN tender process being scrapped. So they want to see all of the applications that were made. Or the opposition wants to see all of the different applications that were made by the various carriers and various consortiums.
At no stage was it in confidence that I was aware.
Well, I would have thought it was in confidence, yeah, because they'd be entering into a commercial relationship, or would have been entering into a commercial relationship with the government and for the awarding of the contract. So they probably don't want that sort of a lot of that information released.
Oh, well, it'll be interesting to see what comes out in the wash, whether Nick gets his way under Freedom of Information. So.
Yeah, well, he's threatening to block it unless the information is forthcoming.
Unfortunately, I think we're going to see a lot of this in the next little bit. Just to give you another example, Kevin Rudd, you know him, K Rudd,
yep.
He's into the world's biggest everything at the moment, not only the world's biggest broadband and the world's biggest deficit, he's now going for the world's largest solar project.
The world's largest solar project,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. The federal government says it wants to create the largest solar energy project in the world. Now, on face value, this is good. It says that the project will be as close as possible to the existing energy grid. Visiting Liddell Power Station in the Hunter Valley, Prime Minister Rudd said that the government would spend almost $1.4 billion creating the project, and the funding is part of the government's commitment to spend $4.5 billion on reducing carbon pollution. So, you know, Mr. K. Rudd, he's got a lot of ambition here, and I admire him for that. But I was listening to other commentators talk about potentially what's going on at the moment. And once again, you've got to take all this with a grain of salt and add it to the big mix, because everybody has their own agendas. And Mr. Costello is pretty much the same. But he was on Melbourne Radio this morning talking about his disappointment with what the current government has done in respect to funding of broadband and the cash handout, saying that we're going to be paying for this. When I say we, you, me and everybody, for at least the next 20 years until the budget comes back into balance, because we've got a fairly sizable debt that we're going to have to fund for the next little bit. So anyway, we'll see what happens. And the upshot of all this too is not only is it the blocking of the NBN, but it's also the AlcoPops tax, which went through Parliament recently as well.
They're going to keep all of the money, is that right?
Yeah, they are, but that's probably not the point. What the trigger is that the current government is looking to have a double dissolution trigger hanging over the heads of the opposition party to force an election at any stage, whether or not that's going to come to fruition or not. But once again, if I think from my understanding of how Parliament works, they've got 3 months. If they resubmit a bill twice, within 3 months, they can have a double dissolution, which means by, I think, October this year, They can force us all to go and vote again if we really want to. And I think it's a good option for Kay Rudd at the moment, despite the fact of his recent budget, where his popularity fell 10% because of what they did in certain areas of funding. So unpopular. But anyway, our show is not about politics. It's about technology. But there you go. There are all the triggers, and that's how the NBN and all those sort of things are all being put into the mix at the moment to colour our wonderful political landscape.
Sometimes it's a political show with a little bit of technology mixed in.
It is. Shouldn't be like that, though, should it?
I don't know. You tell me.
Do we like a bit of politics from time to time?
Give people
thrive on, really.
Give people what they want.
Absolutely. All right, moving right along. The EU, the European Union, has hit Intel with massive fines. The EU has fined 1 billion euros. Now, get the calculators out. What are we, about 50 cents to the euro?
It's like Dr. Evil. $1 billion. It's about 2 billion Australian.
That's a lot of money. But then again, if you put it into perspective to someone, a company like, it's going to hurt.
It has to hurt. That's got to hurt anybody, doesn't it?
But we're talking numbers like the Australia's debt at the moment, aren't we? It's not quite Australia's debt. It's about, when we look at 51 billion, that's about a 25th of our debt. But nonetheless, that's still a big whack in the back pocket.
I've been all bitter and twisted and cynical about this sort of thing before. No one is actually going to get paid. No one's going to pay a $2 billion fine. It's just not going to happen. They're going to appeal this, and it's going to be drawn out in the courts for years and years and years, and eventually they'll reach some settlement where they pay actually a tenth of that, or they make a contribution to some wildlife fund to save the sperm whales somewhere in Greenland.
And 100 hours of community labour.
Mr. Intel isn't going to knock on the door of the EU regulator tomorrow and go, oh, I'm really sorry. Look, here's your check for $2 billion. You know, you'd probably take a money order or whatever. It's not going to happen. It's all just pie in the sky figures that are meaningless.
That's all I like about Dr. Ronnie. He's such a cynical person.
What did I say last week? A cynic is what an idealist calls a realist. I'm a realist, Andrew. This is the real world.
Absolutely. No, the sad thing is that there's a lot of sense in what you just said.
It's not going to happen. Intel have said that they will be appealing the decision.
Yep.
And so we'll wait to see what happens as a result of that.
All right. New Zealanders, listen up. Excuse me, I just had to clear my throat. I didn't mean to say those frogs. Let me start again. New Zealanders, listen up if you're listening to us in Magic up there in the top of North Island of New Zealand. Leave it in. It's all fun. New Zealanders finally get Android. Is this good? Dr. Ron, says he, who's an Android user.
This is sensational. Now, why have New Zealanders just now got Android? What has happened?
I don't know. New Zealanders will finally be able to buy a mobile phone based on Google's Android operating system in June.
Good.
With Vodafone revealing that it had secured a local exclusive deal to sell the HTC's upcoming Magic handset. This new handset's white. Have you seen it? Look. Good for radio.
Oh, right. White one. We'll hold that up to the webcam. Speaking of which.
Oh, have I got one? Are we on? Is this camera?
That one's working.
That one's good. Oh, there you can see that.
Up to the webcam.
Sorry, people listening on the radio, but go and have a look. There's a new white HTC Dream. Dr. Ron's got a black one. I've only ever seen a black one.
Yeah, you can hold that one up to your... Is my webcam working?
Yeah, right there.
Oh, there we go. Hello. Now, this is interesting because the new HTC white one, well, it's not called the white one, it's called the...
It's a bit more dreamy than a black one, if you ask me.
What's it called? It's a...
I don't know.
The model
name.
It's
called a Dream.
The Dream.
Yeah. Is it? The HTC Dream.
But I've got the HTC Dream. What's that
black
one?
You've got the black version.
Is that a white HTC Dream? I thought it was a new...
He's catching up, James. He's onto it.
Pay attention.
Do you want to edit that out too?
Questions will be asked. Okay. Can I have a look? That's awesome.
Have a press release.
A white HTC Dream.
You're going to go to New Zealand and buy a white one now.
No, she cried. It's the...
It looks different to yours.
It's because it is. It's the HTC Magic.
Oh, the Magic.
The Magic.
The Magic Dream.
The Magic Dream. The HTC. Okay, so New Zealanders are going to get the HTC Magic.
What's the difference between Magic and a Dream?
Oh, it's a different model. That one's rounded, and it's got different buttons, and it probably has Google
Latitude.
Doesn't
look like it's got a slide-out keyboard, actually.
And it probably works.
You would
with,
think they'd actually have it in the phone.
Wonder how the battery life is on it.
Yeah, it's probably got a battery that works, and it's probably come standard with Latitude, which would be really nice. Now, this is excellent news for New Zealanders. The Android operating system is an open-source operating system for PDAs, mobile telephones, small-screen devices. Anybody can use it. Anybody can write applications which will run on Android. There are other manufacturers besides HTC that are now incorporating Android into their devices as the operating system. So it's very exciting. It's good news. And look out, Windows Mobile. Look out, S3. Android's on your heels.
Speaking of Google, Someone tripped over the extension lead at the Google headquarters in...
Oops. But they've got so many...
Mountain View the other day, didn't they? Oops, a daisy. Internet users worldwide were given a short taste of life without Google. And needless to say, they didn't like it. The internet giant experienced technical problems, which brought down its homepage and virtually ground to a halt services such as email, YouTube, and Google News, performing sluggishly or unavailable in some areas. Have you ever...
Just as well, they're not in production, isn't it?
It is.
Just
in beta. Absolutely.
Like it's in
Everything's
beta.
In beta.
And this is why, potentially, Google would say, this is why it's in beta. We're still fine-tuning. We're still load-balancing everything. We're working out what the traffic demands are on these systems. And it's not yet
He's
released.
He's got his cynical hat back on again, hasn't he?
No, I'm putting the Google hat on. This is what they would say.
We're going to be hearing from Marissa later on from Google.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because they're launching new products. Maybe it was when they put the new products online that it took out the circuit breaker. It just couldn't handle the load anymore and went kaput. Anyway, so if you missed out on your Google for a bit, it's quite disconcerting, actually, because you actually go and check your internet connection when you can't find Google. Have you noticed that? You go to...
Google's not working. What?
Google is the test you use, isn't it?
Exactly.
To make sure your external connection's working.
You go, oh, geez, I better go and check the modem and better go and do that. But you don't think to go to another web page. But yeah, anyway. Also, in Google News this week, they're simplifying a migration path from any other, well, Yahoo's and what's the other one? Hotmail. To come across to Gmail, which is potentially a good thing, really, because they're trying to get all the market share they can possibly get. They haven't got enough. Says they who have 91% of market share in Australia on their search engine. But anyway, they want more.
In your Gmail account, you get 8 gig for free.
Eight gig.
Yeah, that's good. That's not too bad, is it?
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing how much email you can store on that, and spam for that matter.
Oh, yeah.
Google has updated Gmail to make it easier for users to migrate from these competing networks. Users can import all their contacts, existing messages, and new mail from services such as Yahoo, Hotmail, and AOL. Did AOL still exist? They tried here for a bit or something, didn't they? Then they just disappeared off their radar.
They sent out little floppy disks to everyone in the country, didn't they?
Well, that's a problem to start with, isn't it?
Well, we were talking about the late 80s.
Oh, really? That far ago?
I think I've still got about 100 of them in my workroom.
Oh, good. Excellent. So there you go. A bit of Gmail news for you this week. We'll keep going a little bit longer. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Andrew McComb, and JD in this evening.
Talking about the New Zealand now getting Android on the HTC Magic and also the HTC Dream, which I'm using. Gmail is very, very tightly integrated with those products, and it works extremely well.
Funny about that. It's their operating system,
isn't it? Well, that's exactly it. But it works very, very well, especially if you're using mail in what we call IMAP mode. So you're actually... using your Gmail online in a web browser, and if you receive a message or if you send a message or make a change, you'll notice it's reflected on your telephone straight away. It's very, very good.
Now, is that synced IMAP so that if you lose coverage, you've still got your email, or if you lose coverage, that's the end of it?
If you lose coverage, you've still got your email. You can still access what's on the device. Keeps a cache.
So it's synced.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good.
All right. Twitter. Let's talk about Twitter before we go to the break. Do you know who Mike Massimino is?
No, but I'm sure you're going to tell us.
Yeah. He's apparently one of the astronauts in space at the moment, and he's tweeting.
He's tweeting.
As you do from space. As if you have
Telstra from up there.
I don't know. I reckon NASA's probably put a Wi-Fi link in for them, or they've got their own special... I know, translator underneath their recent spacecraft or something like that. But the astronaut is sending messages to the social networking site from 350 miles above the Earth on the space shuttle, Atlantis. When did that go up? It was about a week or so ago. That must be halfway through the mission.
It was about to launch when we were doing our last program. So coming up to a week.
So I must admit, I'm not following him. I found some other very interesting people to follow. But if you are following him, let us know. He's averaging about 4 tweets a day. Before the launch, and now that he's in orbit, he's down to 1.
A bit busy.
Now, I know. That's about what we feel like, isn't it? You're down to 1 tweet a day. How many do you do, Dr. Ron?
Oh, it varies.
I've seen you. You get very excited about things and don't hear from you for weeks.
Yeah, sometimes 1 or 2 a day or 3 a day or 10 a day, sometimes none.
Yeah. So go and follow him. He's the first person to tweet from outer space. That's probably a fairly good gong to get, really.
USSR Under in our chat room says, in space... nobody can hear you tweet.
Yeah, that was a joke going around earlier on in the week. Well done, USSR Under. Come and have a chat to us at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Join the clan. Other interesting news, Dick Smith is using Twitter to silence dissatisfied customers, according to current.com.au, a new source that I haven't found before. But Dick Smith Electronics doing its best to live up to its self-applied TechSperts label using Twitter. to communicate with consumers and promote specials and sales. To me, that flies in the face of what social networking is all about, but nonetheless, there would be people out there that may be interested in what the electronic Dick Smith has to say. Would you follow a tweet like that, a commercial tweet? Anyone?
Maybe, maybe.
Yeah?
I follow the Macworld US magazine Twitter feeds.
Yeah,
so
but
that
there's
I know
a reason
going on.
For, yeah. Hmm. But a commercial outlet, like if another manufacturer, not so much manufacturer, but a reseller, like, you know, you look at Dick Smith, they sell a lot of brands. If another manufacturer, like, a white goods store came online and started tweeting, would you subscribe to that? I don't know.
Depends if I was likely to upgrade my white goods regularly or not.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, they might be tweeting useful information. Well, they might, if it's just advertising propaganda.
Ah,
then,
there's the key.
You wouldn't bother. And this is
if it comes in and buy our new white schmicky little thing for $140. Look here, I go no.
No, this isn't. These aren't.
It's not what social networking's for.
No, it's not a Twitter message. It's just spam, and you wouldn't be. This is the crux of the problem that Telstra Big Pond had very early on with Twitter. They were sending what appeared to be just automated robot style tweets. And everyone was saying, this is very, very lame. We're not going to follow this.
Yeah, one of three possible responses you could get, I think, at the time, wasn't it?
Exactly. But then they got the message. They listened to what everyone was saying, and they personalised the service, and it's now fits much, much, much better in the whole social media thing.
They're still tweeting too, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And they've got a lot more followers and a lot more respect for having changed and listened to what people told them.
I think
them.
There's about three humans that do it now, if I recall.
I think
I've
it's
seen
people that
tweets.
Are logged into a call center somewhere, and they just keep their eye on what goes on.
Oh, so, okay. Hmm. Yeah, good. All right. Since launching the 140-character revolution on the 6th of November last year, Dick Smith has tweeted 182 times. Whilst 0.95 tweets per day is relatively modest rate, use of the service has picked up recently. So this is something that's, moving in the retail industry. So I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe if you're interested in getting a gadget from a supplier like that, you may follow their tweets to see when they're online. I subscribe to IMAX here in Melbourne. They tweet. Did you know?
I didn't know that IMAX tweeted.
Oh, well, there you go. IMAX Melbourne. They do tweet. So if you're interested in getting tickets early for IMAX, do that.
And they tell you what's coming up and stuff.
They do. And they have special nights and things like that. So you can go and find out, I guess, via their tweets what they're tweeting about. But I still, at the moment, following Will Anderson. Very funny.
Well, there's a lot of celebrity people that you can follow. A lot of comics.
You were saying Miff Warhurst from Spix is tweeting. Well, that's got to be good.
She likes watching MasterChef.
Does she?
As does my wife. No, she always
MasterChef.
Giggles at the Miff Warhurst comments while she's watching I call it MasterChef.
Well, you find that a good thing about Twitter, don't you? I remember you saying that when the Logies were on, you were watching Will's tweets.
Oh, they're watching Rove McManus as well. Yeah, it certainly made it entertaining to watch. Wouldn't have been entertaining without those
No,
guys.
I could imagine. Anyway, speaking of entertaining, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron is across the panel from me this evening, and so is Justin as well. And we're going to take a little break right now, all things going according to plan. And we'll be back with the view from CBIT, I think.
View from the CBIT.
View from CBIT after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Police called to control crowds at a technology fair in Singapore.
The sale of Apple TVs has gone up a third in the past year.
How frustrating. Very.
Twitter came to life like you wouldn't believe.
What next, I say?
Around about $10 billion from the NBN.
Well, that's a bit unusual, isn't it? I'm not sure what to make of that.
Those people who found themselves hacked turned into porn stars very quickly.
Entertaining.
Oh, look, Dr. Ron, I haven't seen you like that before.
Informative.
My old phone is at like 32 by 32 pixels.
Independent.
Well, that's impressive.
I smoke. That's right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Don't breathe this.
Did you know that whenever Tech Talk Radio is live to air, you can chat with the panel in real time? It's marvellous, this internet thingy. So wherever you are, anywhere in the world, you can be a part of Australia's premier technology show. You don't even have to register. Just log on to chat.techtalkradio.com.au and add your voice to the growing number of interactive Tech Talk listeners. It's a great way to ask a question to a guest or to the panel. Come on, join the fun. chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening.
That you are. Welcome back. Headphones on, boys. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Andrew McComb, Justin Dunlop in this evening. And everybody on the chat. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Something that was humorous today, which I had a bit of a chuckle when I saw it go across. Census. You remember them, don't you?
I do remember Census.
They put out the Yellow Pages, and they could be one of 100 brands hit hardest by the federal government's decision to expand its Do Not Call register to take on business numbers and faxes. Yes! Sorry. I had to get that off my chest.
You're all fired up about this one.
I am. Don't you? Well, you probably don't get nuisance calls. Well, probably all your calls are nuisance calls. It works when you think about it, Dr. Ron. But you get these phone calls from these telling, hi, I'm just ringing to confirm that your listing is correct and that we'd like to see you this and all that sort of stuff. And anyway, finally, as part of the budget, and I don't know how this is part of the budget, but the announcement came. Maybe it was just one of those things that they put under the radar at the same time. The Do Not Call register is being extended to cater for business telephone numbers now and faxes, because I think, Dr. Ron, you were one of those. You've taught me everything I know about how to annoy people with facsimile machines, like printing out order forms and sticky taping them together in a loop around a facsimile machine and just continuously sending to other people.
Did it happen? Well, we were getting spam faxes for weeks, and we made so many attempts to stop that particular company faxing us this junk. You come into work every morning, and there'd be 15 pages of A4 paper on your fax machine wasted with garbage. So we got three pieces of paper, stuck them together, hit the dial, faxed it back to them, sticky taped the
here's my Yoda
paper into
Yoda.
into a loop, let it run for half an hour.
Oh, master, that tell is me, just amazing. Tell me so.
Yeah, 148 pages later.
Did you ever get a fax from them again? Did they respond?
Nope.
Oh, good.
I got a message.
Nope. We're running a very own.
Okay, we give in.
That
Stop.
Was the doctor on Do Not Fax register. Seemed to work at the time.
Oh, very yes. good. Yeah. Well, if you've got any other fax tricks, that'd be good to know those. But that was a doozy, that one.
Now, you're not a fan of fax.
No, I actually cancelled my fax service the other day. I was sick to death of paying $35 to Telstra each month just for the privilege of receiving a couple of faxes a year.
Mm.
It just gets a bit over the top now. So I've resorted to email it, sign it, PDF it, and scan it, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Which is pretty easy for people to do these days, I think, anyway. Am I wrong?
It is in the industry that you work in. I've dealt with people who... There's still people running businesses out there that say, oh, email, yeah, we check that every day. And
we check that.
Yeah.
That thing.
Yeah, we check the email. We start the computer thing up and we check that and say, did you get my email with this in it? Oh, no, we haven't checked our email yet today. I think, oh, no. Come on, get online. Get the 21st century.
I know. I could live without my telephone, but I couldn't live without my internet, I don't think. It's just everything now evolves on it from social sort of events right through to, business.
There is sadly, there is still a massive demand for fax and fax products.
Really?
And there are companies out there that make a bajillion dollars in selling, like from small.
Who uses a fax?
Lots and lots of people.
Who?
Lots of people.
No, don't say, don't give me, qualify yourself.
I'll give you one example off the top of my head.
Probably government agencies and stuff like that.
Used to be a customer of an organisation I used to work for, which was Qantas.
What?
They've got hundreds and hundreds of fax ports.
They've gone to e-ticketing now. What do you mean they need faxes?
They have got hundreds and hundreds of fax ports.
What do they use them for?
If a call centre operator is talking to somebody and says, would you like this itinerary sent to you via email, and they're talking to the other person I was talking about before. I go, oh, email, no, we haven't checked that yet today. Can you fax it to us?
Just they hang
go,
up
certainly.
On them.
The call center operator clicks the fax button, and it goes across their network to a fax server, and it sends out.
And I guess they still want a paper server. Ticket as well.
Well, they can do whatever they like. I mean, people like Qantas will, accommodate everybody's needs along those lines. Mm. But faxing's a massive business.
Yes.
There are companies like Captaris in the United States that make fax servers, and that's like their core business. And they have...
I'm sorry I asked.
And you laugh, but they have, inside the PCs, they will have digital fax cards. So we're not talking about like 4-port fax cards that can send out 4 faxes at a time. We're talking about cards that can send out 30 or 60 channels of fax at a time.
And the days must be numbered, surely.
4 cards like this in a server, so that's like 240 concurrent ports sending faxes. It's a massive business.
Well, they're in deep trouble with the Do Not Call register coming to Australia for businesses and for business faxes.
Could be.
Absolutely.
Could be.
Let's talk about something else. See if we get hot under the collar about this. In Korea...
It is hot in here.
It is. Fairly warm in here.
Just us ranting and raving. Yeah.
In South Korea... they're using technology to develop
fax technology.
No, they're actually developing electric cars, which is not really to news, because obviously everyone's got electric cars happening these days, and even Toyota have got a hybrid these days. But what's different about what's happening in South Korea is they're actually putting magnetic road strips under the bitumen, which power the cars.
Yes.
Now, isn't this
magnetic
cool?
Magnetic road strips. Yes.
Road strips, obviously. And what they're doing is the university over there in South Korea developed a plan to power electric cars through recharging strips embedded in the roadways that use technology to transfer energy found in some electric toothbrushes. So there you go. We've solved the problem. We're going to use technology and electric toothbrushes to power automotive transport around the world.
5,000 toothbrushes in your car and away you go.
Yeah. Obviously, they use this to transfer energy, because I've often wondered how you do this. And you can actually buy things where you can power certain devices, ever so weak, certain devices over radio or whatever the Ethernet is these days, can't you? No.
Well, all of those types of gadgets, like toothbrushes, I always thought that
it was induced. You put it through a loop.
It was an induction electronics. So you have a peg that the toothbrush sits on the stand, and it's a coil.
Yeah.
And it uses induction to actually charge. But this is different.
It's a bit like the farmer in the field when they used to bury copper underneath the big high tension power lines and get free electricity from underneath. No.
Oh, I didn't think so. Come in, spinner. I was going to say, that sounds like an odd spot.
It does, really.
That's a good idea, though. I wonder if you could try that. I wonder if anyone's given that a go. You can bury copper plates.
Just stand underneath it with your electric toothbrush and see if it charges up for you.
That's interesting.
Technology is a wonderful thing.
Because there are people that are always concerned about the strengths of the electric fields around the high-tension power lines.
Well, the plan, let's get back to the magnetic road strips. The plan is still in the experimental stages and calls for power strips around 20 centimetres to 90 centimetres wide and perhaps even several hundred metres long to be built into the tops of roads. So then as you zip along, you get a bit of a charge.
Now, this is the same as inductive charging.
Yeah,
so
I
thought it was
parks.
Different, sorry, but no, it's not. So it's non-contact transfer of electricity. Inductive charging works with magnets and cables on the underside of the vehicle, making connection with the current.
They should put it in car parks. When you build your next big, supermarket car park, you can plug into the meter down the back there. You just park in a spot and charge your car up.
I was going to say you need things to be moving for the magnet to work, but yes.
Oh, well, you've had the magnet, but if you were using something like induction technology, like Dr. Ron was saying, that wouldn't be too hard. You could just... Yeah.
You'd also have to work out how to meter the electricity, the power that a car uses to charge itself. You could do that with like ETAG type technology.
I wonder if you could go the next bit. You know how with solar electricity you can put back into the grid? If you go really fast in an electric car, can you put back into the grid?
Maybe you can. Maybe you can. I don't know.
The mind boggles really, doesn't it? Anyway, so there you go. A bit of news on electric cars out of Korea. What will they think of next?
So there are people that are going to persevere with electric cars. It's the way of the future, is it?
I think so. Mm. Now, let's talk a little bit about Sony, a little bit about Pioneer, two of the big names in panel televisions these days. Both of them are having tough times in Japan.
Tough times.
The Sony Corporation reported its first annual net loss in 14 years and forecast bigger losses for later on in the year, saying that pressure from sliding sales, competition in gadget prices and the stronger yen was expected to continue. The Japanese electronics and entertainment company said that it lost 165 billion yen, which is equivalent to about 1.72 billion Australian dollars in the January-March quarter, compared to 29 billion profit for the same time in the previous year. Now, obviously, Australia is not doing much towards the filling up the coffers of such corporations, because even at the moment, the sale of screens and televisions in this country, because of the move to digital, has gone through the roof.
Mm.
So we mustn't be making a dent in the world market, is all I can say. Because I think everyone's, I don't know, I know a lot of people now, even my parents have a big new flat screen television for digital. Because it gets turned off in Adelaide, well not Adelaide, but South Australia's first to go for television.
We've got this massive incentive locally in our market to upgrade your televisions. Make sure if you get a new TV, make sure it's got a digital receiver. Mm. But there's still, the big names like Pioneer that are still... losses.
Pioneer's looking to get out of the screens. I think they announced that a while back that they were getting out. I still think they're supporting them, though. But, yeah, Pioneer warned on Wednesday that it would spend a sixth straight year in the red as it pulls the plug on its loss-making television businesses and slash thousands of jobs. The troubled electronics maker said its net losses ballooned to around 130 billion yen, which is a lot. It's about a little bit shy of what Sony's was. So, Anyway, it's the company blamed poor performances on slumping sales of car audio products, plasma displays, and DVD drives. Yeah, well, Blu-ray's where it's at now, isn't it? Blu-ray's really cheap. You go to the local electronic shop and you can buy a reader for next to nothing. But then again, you can also buy a DVD player for next to nothing. They're about $20 these days at the local electronic shop.
Mm.
So there you go. The major manufacturer is obviously having a bit of a tough time over there. So I don't know what will happen. I think it'll just take the next major surge of consumer confidence to actually turn that around. But they've had it very good for a long time. I don't know what they're complaining about really when you think about it. So have you got any products made by those manufacturers that you can think of in your house, boys?
Pioneer and who else are we talking about?
Sony.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of Sony devices. Nothing Pioneer.
I've got a couple of Sony devices.
Hello, Michael Broadhurst, if you're listening.
Hi, Michael. He's been on the program before.
Oh, no. He doesn't like me anymore.
Oh, doesn't he?
No.
Oh, that's sad.
Goodness.
No Pioneer products, but I have...
No.
I might have some component of my audio system might be Pioneer, but I've got Sony products.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they're all good. They all make fantastic little products, and their research and development has probably, you know, permeated other brands as well. So we've probably got them all there in some manner of speaking in the home collection.
I don't have any actual brand Sony or Pioneer products, but interestingly enough, Apple story again, the PowerBook 100, which was the first laptop that Apple put out, was in fact designed by Sony on behalf of Apple. So what they did is they gave them the Mac Portable, which if anyone remembers was a 20 kilogram portable computer, and told Sony to miniaturize it for them. So they did. And it was the PowerBook 100.
See, there's a story everywhere you look.
Mm.
Speaking of stories, CeBIT, the show in Sydney, Adam Turner went up there during the course of the week, the consumer thingy me book.
I would have loved to have gone. That would have been great.
Well, it would be good to have a budget to do that sort of
stuff.
Some
colleagues of mine went to Germany one year, to the real CeBIT.
Oh, yeah.
The CeBIT.
The real CeBIT.
Not the little backwater down under one.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, little backwater down under one.
Adam went up there and he was bumped into a telephony provider. And he was grilling him all over the VoIP sort of things. Have you got any voiceover IP?
Yes.
You do, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, I do.
Are you finding it as good as it's all made out to be?
It is pretty good for what it is, but in terms of value for money, I am seriously considering cancelling the service that I've got at the moment.
Really? Why?
It's because it's not value for money. I'm spending... The way that it's structured is it's on my service is on a plan, like a mobile phone plan.
Oh, okay.
And for the sake of 3 or 4 or maybe 5 telephone calls in a month, which is costing me, what, $20?
Okay. You should, because you're like everybody else these days, using mobiles for outbound calls.
I can see a time when all we do is just have the naked DSL on the phone lines with no phone service and use our mobiles for everything.
Well, maybe it's time to hear what Adam has to say about his view from the couch from CeBIT 2009 in Sydney. Okay, we've taken the view from the couch on the road this week. It's the view from CeBIT. I'm standing here talking to Renee Sugo, who is the technical director of VoIP provider MyNetPhone. MyNetPhone have just started offering naked DSL. Renee, welcome to Tech Talk Radio. What the hell's naked DSL?
Yeah, okay, it's a bit of a funny name, but basically naked DSL is when we can deliver a DSL service to your house without you needing a line from your Telstra or incumbent provider. So in other words, the DSL service is by itself without a line rental. That means you can save money on your line rental. Whatever you're paying today for line rental would disappear and you can get broadband directly into your home without line rental.
But I've still got a copper line coming into my house, yeah?
That's right. We're still using the traditional copper infrastructure which goes from your house to the local Telstra exchange. That's still there and it's still in use. But what happens is the line gets disconnected from Telstra in the exchange and gets connected to a different provider's network directly. So you're really cutting Telstra out of the loop altogether, or Telstra or the other incumbent provider who you may have.
And then there's no dial tone on that line. It's not a phone line anymore.
That's right. There's a few things you need to know that it is no longer a phone line. It is now just a broadband line. So, for example, you don't get dial tone. Incoming calls won't work on that and outgoing calls won't work on that. So the way to work around that is to then use what's called VoIP or Voice over IP. Voice over IP is a relatively new technology which lets you make and receive phone calls over the internet. Okay, so we're sort of turning the pie upside down. Whereas before you had a phone line with internet on top, we're now giving you an internet service with a phone on top,
yeah.
Right? And basically, VoIP is really good because it gives you a lot cheaper phone calls and a lot less line rental charges or fixed charges. So basically, you're getting rid of that big line rental charge, replacing it with a reasonably priced DSL broadband service, and then getting a very low-cost phone service on top.
But you're now being slugged for the data for your phone calls and charged for uploads and stuff like that?
Okay, well, as it turns out, with our DSL, Naked DSL service, we don't charge for the uploads and downloads associated with your VoIP service. If you're using VoIP on a regular internet service, you may get charged, or you probably will get charged for the uploads and downloads. The benefit of using our bundle service is we don't charge you for the uploads and downloads, and even after you get shaped, we still don't shape your VoIP service, so you still get high-quality phone service all month long.
So that means you can use the good codecs to get good voice quality because you're not worried about using up all your data.
That's right, right. Codecs are a bit techie, but basically what they do is they let you compress your voice so it uses less data. And generally, the more compression that you have, it sounds a little bit, you know, hoarser. And
like you're at the bottom of a well.
Something like that if you go real hardcore. But with MyNetPhone and our service, we can actually allow you to use the full codecs like G711. It sounds very techie, but that's basically the same codec that's used on the normal telephone network. So that means your VoIP calls will sound just like they do on the normal telephone network, if not even better.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And as you were saying, Dr. Ron, you've got to shop around for the right sort of usage pricing. And a lot of companies like mobile phones, they provide all sorts of different things, don't they?
They do. You've also got to make sure that you have the right broadband plan. Generally, the more bandwidth, the faster your plan, the more...
Although Renee there was saying that it's included in the plan.
Well,
that
with his particular
But that's not
package,
always the case, is
that's
it?
His particular package, that's the case. With the provider that I use, you need to actually have your internet plan already in place and your internet connection in place, and then they whack their system on top.
I use VoIP at the office for my outbound, some of my outbound calls. And I must admit, I find that ringing some regional centres, and this could be completely speculative and could be completely hearsay and unsubstantiated and unjustified, but I have a customer who lives near Bendigo, which is probably about 150 kilometres of where we broadcast from, and I ring him on a regular basis, and the line quality is terrible, but yet I ring someone in Sydney, and it's fine. And then having to justify what I just said, I've also had to ring him back on my fixed line service, and it's fine. Go figure. I don't know how they do it, how they route things around.
Yeah, well, I'm using Engine, have done for a little while now, and I'm noticing that you get lots of cutover from parallel calls. You get lots of metallic voices and so forth in the background.
Oh, yes, the old metallic voice syndrome, yeah.
They're quiet, but when there's silence on the line, you can certainly hear it.
Yeah. You can normally tell with on-hold music. I find that sounds terrible. And Dr. Ron, we were talking on the phone the other day. I drove a space of about 10 kilometres and dropped out four times on a mobile call.
Now, that was impressive.
That was really good, three.
was that on three or after three?
No. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes. So anyway, it's amazing. But it happens. It's technology. It's what we do. So
Adam Turner says it's just the voices
in
your head,
JD. Thanks, Adam.
Yeah, good.
Come and join us on the chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Let's talk a little bit about Google again. They've got a few new things happening. Google Squared, Rich Snippets, and SkyMap. Do any of those ring a bell to you boys? You know anything about these?
I saw these as new products being released. The SkyMap one looked quite remarkable.
It's going to be interesting to have... I haven't played with them yet because it's only just been launched in the US a day or three ago.
Well, with SkyMap, it's something like you hold your PDA up to the sky. Like you hold it on your palm.
All I can say is Google's getting a bit bored with Earth. They've moved on.
Maybe it was April Fool's Day or something, but it was drawing a map based on your GPS coordinates and the direction you were facing and where to look in the sky for different constellations and things that you could pick out with the naked eye.
Absolutely.
But what? Really? No way.
Actually, that's right. They were talking about this a while ago. I remember them saying they were investigating this technology, and now it's available, is it?
I think you might have to bury your copper plates under your high-tension power lines first for it to work, though. Is that right? I don't know about this. This sounds a bit dodgy.
Could well be. Anyway, Lydia Davis is our US correspondent, and she works she writes and reports for a company called Read Write Web.
New York Times. Oh, no, sorry.
She can bring down the New York Times with an HTML injection, but other than that, no. She was hobnobbing it with Marissa Mayer of recently, who's the vice president
At Google. Yeah,
yep. She's the vice president of search products and user experience at Google.
Yep.
I'd like to meet a vice president on a user experience. I think that'd be quite good, really. What does that mean? Anyway, they caught up through the bottom of a glass underneath a bit of a PR thing recently. So I've tried to extrapolate the quality audio from the background hum-hum. So listen closely, and hopefully you'll find out a little bit about what Marissa and Google are or have just launched on us all.
Fantastic.
From another Google service.
Hi, I'm Marissa Meyer, and I'm Vice President of Search and User Experience at Google. And today at the Google headquarters, we've hosted Searchology, which is a conference where we announce new features for search. And today we've had three really exciting new releases. So first up, we have a new search options panel, which launched on our search results page today. And this allows our users to visualize and search and slice and dice their searches in entirely new ways. Can they see things on the timeline? Can they use our new Wonder Wheel? Can they get the most recent results? Can they drill into a particular genre? There's a ton of new tools in the search options panel that can actually be combined in any number of ways to really provide unique views onto your search results. The next thing we previewed was Google Squared, which will be appearing on Google Labs later this month. And Google Squared is the ability to actually do an entire research task with one search. So one of the examples we showed was, for example, was small dogs. And when you searched on small dogs, we actually find a list of different breeds of small dogs and all the attributes about them. And we actually put it into a matrix so you can see the name of the dog, pictures, descriptions, height, weight. You can do all the comparisons across all the values. You can also morph the script. You can add columns, new breeds. You can add new columns with new attributes. And we're really excited with how that whole piece comes together, because data extraction is one of the hardest problems in computer science. And Google Squared is a big leap forward in terms of how that works. And then the final search announcement we had was rich snippets. And we're going to take the description text and excerpted text that appears on our search results page, and in some cases, when it really helps our users, augment it with additional rich information. So, for example, from a reviews site, we might summarize the reviews. How many stars on average is there? How many reviews are there on this particular site or product? For people, we can tell you where they are and what their profession is vis-a-vis information and metadata on LinkedIn. And there's just a lot of elements we can introduce to the searchable page. So we're launching with preliminary partners like CNET and Yelp and LinkedIn. We're hoping to add more. But what's really great about this is it's built on an open standard of APIs where webmasters can add these values directly into their HTML, and then when Google calls them, we can include this in our search results when it's most helpful to our users. And then finally, with a little bit of whimsy, we closed with a new Android application on the Android phone that actually helps people search the stars. It's your very own planetarium, because you can search for, say, a particular constellation, and your Android phone, using the GPS in it as well as the accelerometer, will coach you where to look in the sky to see it. So not only are we doing a better job finding information on the web, we're now helping people find physical things. We've always hypothesized that maybe someday Google will help you find your keys. Today we're helping you find the stars, and we're certainly attempting to reach for the stars in terms of providing better and better search for our users. Thanks.
So, Dr. Ron, you've got an Android. Is that an application that appeals to you?
Search using your stars.
Your accelerometer and your GPS facilities within the Android, or the, what's the new one that New Zealanders have got? The
Magic.
The Magic. Do you reckon that's good? You find yourself out there camping on the banks of the river somewhere, looking up in the sky, I can work out what constellation that is.
Not if my battery's flat. That's not a problem that Google has, though. It's a problem that HTC has. I don't know. This is all... Some people look at features and they say, oh, what use is that?
That'd be great.
And you often defend it and you go, no, that's really good. You can do this, you can do that with it. But it's some point that in time that you have to stop and have a good hard look at yourself, don't you? And say, well, what use is this apart from novelty value? Is it going to be useful? I don't know. What would I do with that? I don't know. Would I stand at the front of my house in the middle of the night and look up at the stars and look at my Android phone? And I don't.
Oh, it's helpful when you've got little tackers around saying, where's such and such a constellation?
Anyway, we're going to stop and take a good hard look at ourselves at the drink fountain.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Do you Twitter? We do. Why not follow us? For the Tech Talk Radio Twitter feed, follow TTR2008 or visit techtalkradio.com.au to see what all the presenters are currently tweeting.
we've now got the technology, it's time to get silly with it.
Yep, people still right. using Internet Explorer.
That would be a shame.
Do you reckon it'll take up? I reckon the youth of today will love it.
Like a Dr. Evil's boardroom.
Yeah, it does change the way the browser behaves.
Oh, I'm excited.
Don't worry about Kaspersky. Get into your local road sign.
Yeah.
I like a fresh install, me personally, but nonetheless.
Entertaining.
I was in until you said maggots.
Informative.
How do you decide who to follow?
Independent.
Oh, aren't they the biggest crock?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
No.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one weird technology radio show.
Yeah, welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. For those of you not on the chat, you can just check on the Tech Talk Radio Twitter feed and you can see what Dr. Ron's drinking in the breaks. It's made a lot of people just cringe out there, Dr. Ron.
A lot of disgust.
You like this TwitPic feature. It's a really handy part of Twitter. You can snap with your phone and upload. Very handy if you're into this sort of social networking side of things. Anyway, Dr. Ron, you mentioned something during the break that we should talk about. What was that?
Yeah, something that was interesting, listening to Marissa Mayer there from Google just before that last break, and she was talking about things that Google are planning to do. There is a new project which some of you may have heard about. If you haven't yet, have a look. It's called Wolfram Alpha.
I've heard about this.
Yes.
Isn't this the ultimate search engine which doesn't claim to compete with Google and
it's designed
can
as
tell you the answer to the ultimate question?
Yes. Well, Mr. Wolfram or Dr. Wolfram, who's designed it, says that it's a computational knowledge engine. If you want to have a look, it's just gone into, well, not beta, it's gone into alpha. It's very much in a test phase at the moment. But if you go to wolframalpha.com, which is Wolf, W-O-L-F-R-A-M, Alpha, A-L-P-H-A.com, and have a look there. It's a bit of a bare-bones sort of page, and it looks a little bit like Google in a way, where you can type in a query. But what this is designed to do is to perform calculations for you. Where Google crawls the web and it indexes information, and it's a search tool, what this does is it actually tries to use the information intelligently. So if you type in a date, for example, it'll return all the information that it knows about a particular date.
What was the URL? I'm trying to follow along here.
Yeah, the URL is Wolfram, W-O-L-F-R-A-M.
Now, that'd be fantastic at Trivia Nights.
Alpha, A-L-P-H-A.com.
Plug this into your mobile phone, everyone, for when you're at the local footy club Trivia Night.
Be very good at Trivia Nights. But you can do clever...
It's very slow, otherwise the internet's not good here. Oh, there it is. Yes, it is. I can see it.
But you can do clever things. Like, you might want to say... you might want to compare stock prices. So, if you put in, for example, BHP space VS for versus space... I don't know, Rio or something. I'm just making this up off the top of my head, but we'll try that. What it does is it will interpret the... What humans would understand it to be. Show me BHP versus Rio. I want to see what the results are for that. Whereas what Google would do is it would find any instance of those of that text. It would look for actual text which said BHP vs Rio, and it would return that to you. And that's what Google's designed to do. That's all it's designed to do. What Wolfram will do is actually make an intelligent decision about the information you're putting in.
It's giving me share prices in pounds and dollars.
Exactly, and it's telling you what it's assumed. It says, assuming that you're talking about BHP Billiton, and its input interpretation is BHP Billiton versus Vale, which is RIO, which is the code RIO. And then it's showing you information about the latest trades and stock prices. It's giving you information about market caps, performance to earning ratios, graphs, relative price history, all sorts of stuff.
So it's really a financial thing, is it?
Well,
is that
no,
what you're saying?
No, not just financial. It could be anything.
I was going to do Telstra versus Optus. What's Optus? TLS versus who? What are they?
You can, well, TLS versus whatever that is. Yep. But it's not just for stocks or anything. It can be used scientifically. It can be used musically. If you're a musician, if you type in something that I've just done, E flat major, E space flat space major. Again, Google would search for that text and return anything where that text was indexed on the internet. What this will do is give you information about E-flat major. It says it's a musical scale, shows you how to play it on a piano keyboard. It gives you alternative scale names, Ionian, which is a name of a mode, a musical mode, which you know about if you're a musician. So it gives you all of this sort of information. So you can use it for scientific inquiries, mathematical inquiries. Let me now,
I've just typed in Telstra, T-E-L-S-T-R-A, the phone company, the incumbent here, and it's come back with the share prices and latest trades and a whole heap of graphs in relation to that.
There you go. So intelligent information about Telstra, not just
not just information which has got the word Telstra contained in it, which but is what a search engine would do.
It's only come back with that information, if you know what I mean. And there's something down there, there's some graphs I've never seen before. That's
but you can then drill down into that information, Andrew. So if you look at Telstra, for example, there's a section there which says performance comparisons. It's comparing daily returns and market volatility against other...
All right, yeah, I'm starting to get it now, yeah.
All right, so it's what it's trying to do, what Wolfram's trying to do is to make an intelligent... interpretation of the query that you've put in there. It's not returning just basic search information like a search engine traditionally has done. This is very exciting, and it's heading down the path of what people call a semantic web. And some people will have heard talk of this before. The semantic web is Tim Berners-Lee's view of what Web 3.0 will be. And that is where computers, instead of just indexing information and returning huge amounts of information to you, computers will actually interpret what you're querying and return intelligent results and intelligent information back to you.
That's very impressive. I just put Apple in and it's come back with employees, 35,100. Revenue, 33.69 billion. Market cap, 109.2 billion US dollars. Oof. Profit to earnings ratio, 23.1. That's not bad. I think I'll invest.
Type in something like this. Type in United States versus Australia.
Oh, please. Really? Yeah. What happens?
Well, I don't know. I've just typed it in.
And?
Input interpretation. Okay, it understands the United States. It understands Australia. It's showing us flags there of each nation. It's showing us the full name. So the full name of Australia is the Commonwealth of Australia. It's showing us internet codes. It's showing us maps, where they are. It's showing us geographic properties. Oh, now, if I don't like the unit square kilometre, I can say, oh, show non-metric units, please, because I'm from the United States. I want to know what it is in miles. And there it is. So it's very, very clever how this is designed. It's in beta. Oh, sorry, it's not in beta. It's in pre-beta. It's in alpha. So they're still fine-tuning and developing.
So
this.
Does it use like a delimiter, like versus, to actually compare things? Is that a...
Yeah, and it will show you how it's interpreted what you've typed in. The very first thing it says below the search, but at the top of the results is input interpretation. It'll tell you what it's done or how it's interpreted your input to achieve it the results that it has. You've got GDP information there, all sorts of stuff.
I put in Rudd versus Howard.
Oh, yeah? Where'd you go with that
one? What did it say?
I don't know. I can't repeat it on the air, really. No, just kidding. It's actually giving me a return for the United States. And basic information for the United States is that Rudd is 2,343rd and Howard is 70th. I don't know what that means. It might be popularity of names or something. So in fractions... Yeah, numbers. There's 14,167 people called Rudd, and there's 2.547 million people. So about 2 million people whose name is Howard. So Howard's a more popular name. There you go, in the United States.
In the United States.
So I tried putting Australia after it to see if there's any further information, but no, it kept coming back to this one, and then it breaks into ethnic things. So it's really
So is this going to be very US-centric like a lot of other
Good question. Stuff? What do you reckon, Dr. Ron? They're very much American-based, I suspect, so...
At the moment, maybe, but I think that the potential is there for this to be a fantastic resource for everybody.
Warlock says if you type in Wolfram Alpha, it blows up the internet.
No, don't do that. Oh, for goodness sake. No, don't blow it up.
I wonder where you got the name Wolfram Alpha from.
Well, Wolfram is the gentleman's name. It's developed by, I think it's Dr. Wolfram. And alpha is because it's in
alpha mode.
Release, alpha mode. Yeah.
So what happens when it comes out of alpha mode? Does it change its name to Wolfram?
It'll probably change its name to Wolfram Beta or just Wolfram.
Well, if it's Google, it'll be in beta for the next 10 years.
True. Stephen Wolfram is the man's name. There okay. you go.
Well, I learn something new every day. I have seen it in the press of recent times, but I just hadn't got around to actually trying it out. But now that I
keep an eye on it. Very, very, very interesting.
I mentioned earlier before the break, too, about Australians splurging on TVs in preparation for the digital changeover. And apparently, the new televisions are the flavour of the month as opposed to set-top boxes. And their old faithful television sets are simply being dumped into landfill, which is also something which is fairly topical. I rescued an old CRT television the other day. Nothing wrong with it. But what do you do with them?
What do you do with them? They take up so much space.
And you're going to put them on eBay for 50 cents and you'll sell them for a dollar for something that you've probably spent thousands on. So it's a real problem, this, putting all these things into landfill, all this technological stuff. Because I think there's even companies that come around and try and strip all the copper and stuff and like that out of it, don't they?
Gold connections and all that sort of stuff.
Yep. There's heaps of holes in the ground. Just fill them up.
That's the spirit.
They'll be filled up.
Aussies bought more than 500,000 TV sets in the first 3 months of 2009, up 5.7%. The same period in 2008. according to research at GfK. More than 2.5 million new televisions have been bought in the past year. Well, that's what? That's not bad. 20-odd million in Australia. That's probably, if you've got four in the family, probably a couple to go. Does that sound right? A few more families need to go and get yourself a nice Bravia or a nice
and
big...
all these TVs that are now around $900.
No, don't buy them. Don't buy them. Do yourself a flavour. And
do yourself a flavour.
That's it. Sorry. I didn't want to sound like Molly Meldrum.
I wasn't suggesting they were good. I was just suggesting
the $900 panels equals disaster. Lip sync problems, all sorts of things. The ACMA, ACMA.
We have lip sync problems every night on the webcam here.
Yeah, too right. The Australian Comedia... You see, look what you've done to me. The Australian Communications and Media Authority clamps down on premium mobile phone services. Now, Adam's been a victim of this, where he went and got a new device from a provider and the number was recycled and he copped the bill from the old person's
SMS
habits
and
things like that. Yep. That's got nothing to do with what I'm about to talk about.
Oh, good.
It just popped into my mind. The ACMA has registered Comms Alliance new industry code covering the provision of premium mobile services and announced a number of additional initiatives to curb abuse of the system by shonky service and content providers.
Now, shonky.
The word shonky is... Have you turned on television late at night and seen all those hot and throbby ads where you have to text something or other to?
It's atrocious, isn't it?
And then the next thing you know, you're on these mailing lists forever and a day. Yeah. Like, buyer beware. Didn't Graham basically say at one stage he, in a week a moment, subscribed to something like that and it cost him a fortune?
I don't think he's ever actually subscribed to something like that, but he...
I think he texted something.
He's often up late. He's a bit of a night owl, Graham.
He is. He's not with us this evening. Good evening, Graham.
Good evening,
you're out there,
Graham.
Head under a computer server somewhere.
Yeah, he's got his head in a computer server tonight. Yeah. Now, yeah, he's a bit of a night owl. He often has the television on in the background while he's doing stuff late at night, and he was commenting about the quality of the commercial advertisements.
They were shocking.
They're
I've never made any of them. These people that just have no clothes on.
Who makes them? Are they like fly-by-night agencies that do it, or are they respectable ad agencies?
No. There's a question for the crew, and maybe they need to have a look at those type of ads.
Yeah.
That'd be very good. Anyway, back to ACMA. These include, this is the new level of providers, including a determination that will legislatively, that's a word, isn't it?
Legislatively, yes.
Mandate a number of specific protections and what the ACMA will promise. Anyway, they're going to obviously have a coherent and comprehensive monitoring framework. The service provider determination will require mobile carriers to provide the option of barring premium SMS services on all plans by the 1st of July 2010 and require all content providers to be registered. And a registry will be set up by industries along the lines of what the ACMA do. So I think that's good. As in, you know, if you want to be able to give your family members a phone and you don't want them to inadvertently or deliberately subscribe to a premium service, then all telecommunications providers, when you sign up, have to tick the box, no premium SMS. But where does that leave things like radio texting services? There's a lot of radio stations around that use 1-9 and then their station frequencies and call signs and things like that. That's a premium service, isn't it?
It's going to depend on the telephone number and the amount of money that they charge. I don't know if technically a service is a premium rate service or if it's just more of a product description. It's a good question.
Yeah, because anything which I think starts with a 1-9 is considered premium, but I could be wrong.
It depends on their billing, I
Someone
suppose.
Tell us on the chat. They'll know out there. Yeah. They know everything on our chat.
Be careful. Be careful.
Yeah, but just the ability to turn off those premium services is going to be good. The other thing, too, is that it'll actually block, I think, a lot of revenue streams for some of those organisations which rely on that unless they provide a kosher service. Anyway, there you go. It's a bit like the the do not call register, but for premium SMSs.
Yes.
Because you can imagine those things, you run up a bill quick smart with those.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep.
In other interesting news, the Australian Parliament is to investigate cybercrime. Because obviously there's a lot of that out there at the moment too.
Yes.
It's launched a parliamentary inquiry into cybercrime and the impact on Australian consumers. It'll be undertaken by the House of Representatives Communications Committee, chaired by Belinda Neal, the member for Robertson in New South Wales. And the committee wants to hear the views of consumers, businesses and experts in the field, as well as federal, state and territory governments. So e-security becoming a real problem there, especially with identity theft, I assume will be probably one of the main things to come under the microscope there for cybercrime. And hasn't the spam been huge of late? I don't know how many email messages I got from the Commonwealth Bank today.
Absolutely, yeah.
And there's been Trojans in them. My Kaspersky has gone, warning, warning, delete, delete, and it's just done it for me. And they're not just like click on the link and go to the website. They're actually emailing Trojans as attachments.
Right.
Woe betide anybody who clicks on those little numbers. So beware. Anything from the Commonwealth Bank is not good. I wonder how the bank deals with that. They must be inundated with people saying, oh, I got this thing in the mail from you and now my computer doesn't work.
Well, you hope they are. Because yeah. if people aren't ringing them and checking, it means that they're all infected and not working anymore.
My understanding is that, look, I'm not a Commonwealth Bank customer, but my understanding is that they don't send emails that are out of the blue to their customers. They probably don't send any emails to their customers. A lot of what the Commonwealth Bank does is online through the CommBank site and NetBank.
Yeah, and that's where they mail their customers, yeah, through those facilities.
All of the messages, all of the messaging will be done through your accounts on those sites when you're logged in.
There's a change
with
to NetBank.
With a secure session in a web browser. You won't actually just get an email out of the blue saying, oh, we're just updating our systems, please send in your name and date of birth and
password.
Which
makes it interesting, isn't it? It's quite sad because from a customer service point of view, you'd want your bank to be able to send you information about your account.
Yep.
And it's certainly one of the banks that we deal with at home. We get updates whenever one of us has made a transaction. We get a notification of the transaction out of our account, which is actually very handy.
You keep tabs on your partner.
You monitor your account, so you make sure that people aren't accessing it inappropriately.
Yep.
But, you know, if you got another email from the whatever bank and it said, type in your PIN number here to check, you'd start believing it because you're used to your bank emailing.
Mm.
So it's a bit of a shame.
It is a shame. But, look, my hard and fast belief is that email is slowly but surely going the way of news groups. It's getting more and more unusable every day. What have we got now? The average amount of spam that occupies email traffic in the world, is it 90%, 93%, 95% of all email traffic in the world is spam? It's going to get to the point whereby it's pointless, it's meaningless, and people are going to migrate to other messaging systems, like social networking, like things like Twitter. They'll be sending direct messages to each other instead of sending email. Email, just people just stop using it. It'll just become completely just one of these automated, completely unusable electronic wastelands. There won't be any humans there. It'll just be robots replying to each other without office messages and spam messages and things.
You've been spending too much time on Usenet. Didn't that go that way?
That's right. USA and news groups and things. I mean, I don't think... How can they still be used?
They're still there. People?
I know, it's bizarre, but if you can wade through all the garbage...
Whilst we were talking about the Commonwealth Bank before, they're launching a new feature called on its NetBank online site that allows users to choose their financial data as it's presented to them, which basically means you can come along and customise your online experience with the bank. This starts tomorrow. They're introducing a new tab, which will be called My Home, and it will, you can configure it to how you want it to be, which is probably good. If you're a business or have a lot of accounts or stuff like that, you can probably customise it. But I'm going to try it tomorrow because I'm a customer of theirs, and I'll let you know what it's like.
Adam Turner in our chat room says Gmail spam filtering is very good. So is Fastmail.
Oh, yeah, go and have a look in your spam filter on Gmail.
I agree, Adam. Yeah, Gmail does do a very good job with its spam filtering. And if you combine that with other spam products, it does work well. The issue that we've still got, though, which is unchanged, is that we've got these massive amounts of bandwidth that are being used every day by junk. And we're paying for that. We're paying for that not only in a monetary sense, but look, in messages
in
being delayed
sense,
and in a practical sense as well. So, yeah, I don't know. I think we'll be sitting in 5 years' time. I don't think we'll be using email as much as we are now.
You've been a big advocate of this over the course of time. So, what do you think will happen? You touched briefly on what might replace it, but are we going to go to maybe a secure system where you would pay to get an account from someone and they then monitor it so that you
don't have
spam? Or
I don't know
like
if
that?
We need to. Some people have proposed this. They've said, look, as far as legitimate use of email goes, maybe we have to charge people 0.0001 of a cent for every email that you send, and then we'll send you a bill like after the end of a month after you've sent 5,000 messages. Yeah, you owe us 3 cents or 5 cents or something. But what that will do is stop machines from sending out millions of emails all at a time, and that's one way to do it. But I think if I said to you, Andrew, 5 years ago, if we were sitting here, which we were 5 years ago, you'll be
scary.
How many tweets did you send today on Twitter?
Half a dozen.
How many emails did you send?
About 2 dozen.
Yeah. How many Twitter messages did you send 5 years ago?
None. Wasn't around.
How many did you send 1 year ago?
None.
Wasn't around. You weren't using it.
None.
So if we're sitting here in 5 years' time, you might be saying to me, yeah, send 100 Twitter messages today, or an equivalent type of messages using an equivalent type of system. How many emails did you send? Email? Oh, none. I think I received a couple, but didn't send
any. It's a bit like the fax. We're talking about faxes.
Exactly. It's exactly right. It's not going to happen overnight. But
Qantas will still be using it.
Well, I think there's a couple of issues here. One is the fax versus email argument is really generational. There's new generation, old generation.
I agree.
But I think the issue between Twitter and email, it's the same generation technology to a degree. Now, I know you can argue against that, and I could probably do it myself, but I won't today. But it's more a lifestyle thing. If you want instant response and you're happy to put out instant information, you'd use Twitter. If you want to archive information, you'd use email. And I think the issue for us is fixing up the email system so that people are actually happy to use it and it's still available. Because if we go the way you're suggesting and people just switch off because it's all too hard, what's going to happen to Twitter in 5 years' time? Or in fact, probably in 2 years' time in reality. It'll get full of spam and junk. We've already talked about it tonight with Dick Smith and various others twittering away about their various products. So it'll go the same way. So I think to a degree, you need to draw a line in the sand and say, we need to fix electronic distribution of information now so that we solve it for future generations and other technologies that are yet to be developed.
I don't know if you can fix email. Do you reckon you can? You'd have to, like, say if we were going to introduce authenticated sending for everybody. So at the moment, the problem is you can send a message from anywhere to anyone, and you'd have to do it.
Little repercussion.
Well, that's exactly it. And there's no authentication that's required. You can represent yourself as anybody, and you can send a message. And that was how the internet was always designed, how it's always worked. But since it's become a commercial concern, and millions of people around the world are using it every day, this is no longer good because people take advantage of the simplicity of sending messages. If you require people to authenticate or to log in before they can send a message with a username and a password, then you're going to have every mail server in the world overnight or over a certain period of time actually switching to that type of system. I don't know if you can fix email now because it's so firmly entrenched. The way that it works now is so firmly entrenched. Mm. I'm thinking that maybe you have to adopt a new system which is introduced new from the ground up. I don't know.
Topic for another day, really. Mm. Just watch this space. A bit like, you know, it'll evolve. People will change their habits and we'll move on. And as you say, email might be a thing of the past.
USSR under says, twits are the users, tweets are the messages. I was calling the messages twits, I think.
Yeah.
You've got to get the terminology right.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Now, I was reading a blog during the week on ITY, one of the tech publications, by Sam Verghese, if that's how you pronounce his name. I just thought of you guys when I was reading this, but this is basically some Brits, a couple of people who live in the UK, had to test life without Windows. Two British IT workers are planning to spend a month without Windows using Linux instead in a project designed to see whether the Linux operating system is capable of delivering the function and style of delivery that is established Windows users can adapt to easily. So these guys obviously never used Linux before, and they're going to give it a bash. They're going to go cold turkey with Linux from Windows environment. Now, Dr. Ron, you're a Linux user. What chances do they have here? Is this going to be a culture shock, or is this going to be something like the Borg and a bit of an assimilation into a new operating system?
Let me answer that question with a question. Does it say what sort of flavour of Linux they're going to be using?
I see you're qualifying your answer already by asking another question, to which the answer is no, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
But these are IT techs.
It does actually say that the pair will be using some EEE PC901s for the project,
yep,
as these are the machines they use most frequently. Both of the machines have been modified with 2 gig of RAM, 32 gig SSD, the solid-state hard drives, and a touchscreen. So there you go. But they're not saying what flavour of Linux they're
using.
I
know people don't remember this anymore, but once upon a time we used to have a word processing system called WordPerfect.
I remember that. Am I showing my age?
Which dominated the world before Word and various other programs came out. And what I've found...
You should do a program. Where are they now?
Yeah, exactly. What I've found, though, and word processing's probably a good example, what I've found is the first one you learn, you're sort of getting the rudimentaries around the system. The second one you try to learn, so if you're moving from WordPerfect to Word or Lotus Notes or whatever it might be, is extremely hard because you're so used to everything works this way. You know, file menus where I save stuff and the view menus where I can set the screen. You get so used to the way the first one works that's sort of your baby that getting the second one to work is really hard because the keys are different, the menus are different, the screen looks different, and it becomes really hard. And then the third and fourth, once you've learned to adapt, I found very easy. And I reckon we'll find the same here, that the guys that are going cold turkey from Windows to Linux, or if they went to the Mac, would probably find it really hard. After that, they'll be on easy street.
I'm going to make an assumption that it's a...
Yeah, qualify your decision. Yep, definitely.
It's going to be a desktop operating system with a graphical user interface. I think they'll be looking at something...
Well, that's what Linux is, isn't it, in modern day sort of... I think it can be a number of things. You could assume the new install, because they're talking Windows 7, so assume the latest and greatest from Linux.
Let's assume the latest and greatest distribution of Ubuntu, for example, which is... help me, JD. 904, is that the new one? Oh, 804,
I can't remember.
There's a new one for 2009. I think they will get by. I think they'll get by quite well. There are a lot of things that you take for granted.
Well, they're IT professionals. They've got the edge.
Yeah.
They've got the upper hand here.
I don't know if that helps or if it makes it more frustrating. I think maybe if you're a user who doesn't have a huge amount of technical nous, you might do better because you'd sit down in front
so
of it.
It could
and
be
go,
a disadvantage.
Oh, maybe. You'd get more frustrated with trying to do more things. I don't know. But if they were using something like OpenOffice, that would work fine if they're running that already on Windows. I use OpenOffice on Windows as well as on Ubuntu. If they used a mail client like Thunderbird, that would work fine, just like it does on Windows.
Just because I'm not a Ubuntu user, can I ask a dumb question, which people out there will be going, oh, God, doesn't he know
anything? No, there's no dumb questions.
Control-C, Control-V, Control-Z. Yep. Very user-friendly keys on a PC and applications, I assume...
Oh, that was a dumb question. No, I'm only joking.
I assume that they are the same as the other platform.
The same.
Well, that's good, because then...
And Alt-F4 closes Windows, Control-P prints, Control-W closes documents.
So if you're a user as opposed to an author or people that are digging into specifically detailed sections of an operating system, they should have no problem.
Hold on. You're assuming people know key codes. I don't think normal users actually use key combinations.
Really? Do you think there are many people out there that don't know how to undo something? Control-Z is one of the most useful keys in the history of computing, I reckon.
When you go into a certificate in Word, they teach you how to use the drop-down menus. They don't teach you about key commands.
Have you been to one, have you?
No, but my wife has.
I think all of those sorts of shortcuts are definitely supported in Ubuntu, and they've tried to maintain all of the commonly used shortcuts like that. Control-Z to undo, Alt, and then the hotcut key.
It's like on the Mac, you have to go one key to the right. You have to go Option instead of Control. Well, there's no Control on the Mac.
No, Command.
Command. There you go. See, I'm a Mac user too. Sorry, Adam.
No, I think they'd get through okay. I think they might struggle through. They might try and do some things and say, oh, how do you do this? I just want to install this piece of software and unpack this and... unzip this and install this, and how do I run setup.exe? But no, it's a totally different way of thinking when you come to installing applications.
Interesting concept, really.
Yeah. But no, I think they'd struggle through.
All right, there we go. That's Tech Talk Radio. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with the Odd Spot Gadget and Website of the Week. We've got so much more to talk about. We've just been going on and on. Look, I've got at least
another 3-hour show. We need to be in here at 7.
No, we're not doing a 3-hour show.
Suffering suck it out. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Let's face it, Telstra has a huge PR problem.
It's called the Integrated Public Number Database.
Hopefully that's not what they're talking about.
No.
You block them, do you?
I do.
Yeah, this is what happened, yeah.
This is what happened.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yep.
Good use of technology.
Adam, you're too far gone to be saved now.
Entertaining.
How can you work in IT and not drink coffee?
Informative.
Often a techie propeller head, Vicky.
Independent.
The SMS is not an on-time delivery system.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And if you get Inga from Sweden showing up.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
I love it when a gadget comes along and it's actually half useful, and I get a bit sort of like, oh, I've got to get one of these.
You get fired up, you get revved up.
Absolutely. During the course of the week, I was, because I'm becoming a media tart recently, I was doing breakfast radio on the ABC.
Breakfast radio.
I don't know how those guys do it, but anyway. Got up, and I was talking to the Ball Brothers. Would you believe they're the equivalent of Red Simons in Melbourne? They're in Adelaide. And they were talking about digital picture frames. And because you can't mention brands on the ABC, I thought, well, I can mention brands here on Tech Talk Radio.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ones that I found in my research was the D-Link DSM-21 210. Now, Adam put me onto this one. He said, have a look at this. And I found this great little picture frame, which is around $350 Australian as a gadget, so not bad. Now, what it is you can actually bung your pictures in there, but you can connect it to your wireless network.
Because it's like $350 Australian. That's an expensive,
fairly expensive
digital frame.
Yeah. But
how big is it?
What it can do, 10 inches.
Oh, okay.
So, but what it can do is you can connect it into your Flickr account and all those other online Flickr-y sort of things, and it automatically checks your online account for any new pictures. So, if you can imagine having a family Flickr account, for example, which is private, anyone everywhere can actually upload photographs into your picture frame.
Yes, I've heard some interesting stories about this.
Absolutely.
Like
that. You think the mind boggles, really, doesn't it? So, and if you can hack someone's Flickr account, well, you're in business.
Oh, I forgot I left that photo in that archive.
Absolutely. But anyway, it's also does video and all sorts of other interesting things. You can have RSS feeds go into it. So it's basically a little browser which you hang on the wall. And
it's like a wireless web browser.
Pretty much.
Hang on the wall. That's a great idea.
And I thought, what a great idea. And, I haven't seen one. I haven't actually physically played with them. But just reading the specifications on it, I thought it was fantastic. It'll go into a LAN just as well as it would anything else. And the other great feature that I thought about it was that it's green. As in, not the colour green, but as in...
environmentally.
It has a motion sensor in it. So it only turns on when there's people in the room. If you leave the room, it turns itself off.
Clever.
Isn't that clever?
That's very clever.
So 10 out of 10 for D-Link. If you're thinking about a gadget and you're looking for a present or something like that. I can't say 9 out of 10 people endorse that anymore because the Gruen boys bought that.
They bought the business name.
They did, so I can't say that anymore. But it was good. So there you go, the Tech Talk Radio Gadget of the Week, one of the new D-Link mobile picture frames, which I think you'd have a lot of fun with that, if nothing else.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
We've been speaking a lot tonight about Twitter, the microblogging service. Twitter asks the question, what are you doing? What are you doing? This website...
Fairly ambiguous question, really, isn't it?
This website of the week is Blip FM, BLIP.FM. Blip asks the question, what are you listening to?
Oh, that's a good question.
It lets you create
TikTok
your
radio.
Yeah, well, Blip FM lets you create your own online music station. You create an account.
Is this like the guys we had on about not last year, the year before from... Oh, I can't think of the name of the thing.
Yeah, similar, very similar. Pandora.
Pandora, that's what I'm thinking.
Very similar Pandora. But this one's interactive. You create an account. You can, if you want to, but you don't have to, link it to your Twitter account or Tumblr or friend feed or your other social network.
I'm losing track of these things.
You can enter an artist or a song name. And what Blip does is it creates a public timeline that filters the blips based on artists and songs that you've just entered. It then plays the songs or plays a preview of the song that other people are listening to. So you can rate these songs or the blips. You can start and stop the music. You can add that user as a favourite DJ. You can even click on other people's profiles to get access to their public station.
Wow, that sounds pretty cool.
It's very, very clever.
So you can pick different genres based on where you live, so you can have different types of music or...
If you like listening to Britney Spears, as we've seen tonight, Andrew, you can put in Britney Spears, and you can see who everyone else is listening. Everyone else is listening to Britney Spears. You can see what they're listening to, the albums that the tracks come from, and you can subscribe to individual channels. It's very interesting the way that's designed. Have a look at that. That's our website of the week, Blip FM, BLIP.FM.
Yeah, I was just reading in the chat too, Adam's apparently Warlock saying that's for USA and Germany too. Have you heard anything about that?
It works here.
It does work here.
I was playing that over the weekend. It's quite well.
Excellent. So it's been hand tested by Tech Talk Radio.
It has.
So have a look, see, and
all right. 9 out of 10 panelists on Tech Talk Radio.
Exactly. Really. Let's quick register that.
Yeah. There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Tested by that much. I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Star Trek's the flavour of the month in cinemas around the world, but mainstream media outlets have invited a tidal wave of complaints, corrections and criticism from Trekkies by factually inaccurate reporting and movie reviews. Hell hath no fury like a Trekkie scorned, says Craig Silverman of the Columbia Journalism Review. He says, imagine the fury unleashed after the Daily Press of Virginia misspelled the name of Spock.
Oh, no, what did they do?
I think they spelled it, I don't know, Spook or Spack or... I don't know.
You have a cat called that?
Yeah, you have. When writing on areas of extreme fan devotion, you better get your facts right. Imagine the barrage of abuse received by The Guardian when it reported that the character Nero, played by Eric Banner, was a Klingon... not a Romulan.
Oh, no. Oh. You can't get that wrong.
Other blatant errors infuriating fans have included the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, which referred to the first Star Trek episode to air incorrectly, and then later published a correction saying that The Man Trap was the first episode. Is that right, JD? It would be...
Oh, it could be.
It could be. Mm. The Washington Post incorrectly referred to the movie's title as Spock, and the Los Angeles Times referred to the character played by Eric Banner as Captain Nemo.
Captain Nemo.
That's our odd
he's
spot.
He's a clownfish, right?
He's a clown.
Clownfish, absolutely.
Clown Romulan.
Hey, that's it. That's Tech Talk Radio for this week. I think we're finished.
No,
are we all done?
We're all done. We're all
okay,
finished.
Okay, good. We'll come back same time next week around. Wherever you're listening to us, in Queensland or in New Zealand or on the pod in the UK, in the tube, you know where you are. It's been fun this week. Gosh, we've covered some territory. We'll do it all again next week. Come visit us on the chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. And, tell us about things. Send us feedback. We love your emails during the course of the week, too.
We've been streaming tonight. You can have a look at the video of the webcam.
Yep.
You can check
out the
forum.
That's back online, isn't it?
It is.
You can see that.
Yeah, forum as well, .techtalkradio.com.au.
All right. Till next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-9818 2756 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.